1977. Again, that's 1-800-444-1977. Or go online, our website, alternativeradio.org. That's alternativeradio.org.
Now, that, here's the most sinister thing to me, though. And a lot of this is research I've done and reporting I've done, but also because I work now with a group called the Economic Hardship Reporting Project, which I am proud to say I launched, but we get starving journalists, who are pretty easy to find, to do really good research on these sorts of issues. The most sinister thing, it seems to me, is the ways in which government contributes its own harassment of the poor. 10 million people are charged each year in this country with misdemeanors. Many of these are very minor misdemeanors. I'll mention some of them. But they still lead to fines and even jail time. 75% of the people charged with misdemeanors, this is kind of interesting, are indigent. And the average fine for a misdemeanor is in the range of $200 to $500. You're already poor, right? You've got a low-wage job. In New York, it is illegal to put your feet up on a subway seat that is empty. The whole subway car can be empty. It can be 3 in the morning, you're returning from your dishwashing job. You put your feet up, and a cop comes in. You are not warned. You are not reprimanded. You don't receive a citation. You are arrested. You're right then taken off the subway train and into a police station. And so you know, the next thing is, you know, you're going to be charged. You're going to have court costs because now the defendant is charged with all the court costs. Or increasingly with the court costs. In Washington, D.C., you can be arrested, not just warned or given a citation for driving with an expired license. And so you can see how this grows. And the example I like to give is if you're driving with a broken headlight, it could cost $150 maybe to get a new one put in. You don't have $150. You've got to get to work or from work or whatever. And you get stopped for that. You get fined $200. Well, if you had that money, you would have fixed the headlight, right? So you can't pay that. Then the court is going to issue a summons at some point. The summons is going to be turned over to a collection agent, which may not bother even getting your correct address. You know, most people who are issued summonses don't show up and say they never got the summons. That's called failure to appear. Now you're in real trouble. Now there's a warrant out for your arrest, and the likelihood is you have no idea about that. Another thing that is in the public sector realm is a growing number of cities have taken to ticketing and sometimes handcuffing children found on the streets during school hours. In Los Angeles, the fine for truancy is $250. In Dallas, it can be as high as $500, crushing amounts for people who don't have much money. In New Mexico, when there's a second conviction for a child's truancy, a parent may face a fine of not more than $500 or imprisonment for up to 6 months. Now, we want children to go to school, right? But in L.A., some community groups studied the situation because, you know, people were getting afraid to send their children to school in case they were a little bit late and got caught in the street and these fines started piling up on the family. So the community organizations found out that 80% of the so-called truants were simply late for school because a city bus was too full and whizzed right by their school bus stop so they couldn't get to school on time. I know sometimes it sounds good. Let's really get those kids in school. Let's get the parent, make the parents responsible. This has become an additional way of criminalizing the poor. It is not the kids in Beverly Hills whose families are getting tickets for this. This sort of police harassment has increased since the recession started, as far as anybody can tell me, because it looks like it's a way for municipalities and counties to raise their revenues. They're really pressed for revenues, so they said, let's have more infractions. Let's have higher fines. Let's charge our court costs. What happens if you don't pay a fine? Well, you may go to jail. There's a case I found pretty fascinating about a South Carolina woman who was trying to make a living, you know, post losing her business in the recession by selling plasma, her own blood, and also scrap metal. She was charged with having a, quote, messy yard. Who knew that was a crime? Fined $480. Of course she didn't have $480. So she was jailed for 6 days until there was a community protest to get her out. It's very easy to get in deep trouble. The story that I find most amazing is comes from Michigan. It's of a woman. I should mention this is actually a white woman. If this story sounds if it sounds like all this is racial profiling, it is not. Always, a homeless woman, a full-time worker, was arrested, you know, as a homeless person. When they got her, they found she had an even worse thing on her record than being homeless, and that is her 16-year-old son was in jail, and she was not keeping up with his room and board charges. So she was jailed because of that. So you have their two family members caught in this situation. Fortunately, the ACLU intervened in her case. You know, one of the things that's proliferated since the economic downturn is laws that outlaw, essentially, homelessness. A good example would be, a particularly evil one would be from Sarasota, Florida, which passed an ordinance that it is illegal there to be asleep outdoors. And, quote, when awakened, state that he or she has no other place to live, close quote. In other words, if you're sleeping in a park and a police officer comes over and says, and shakes you awake, and you say, oh, you know, I just didn't feel like staying in my penthouse condo tonight. I really needed a change. Fine, that's legal. But if you waken and you say, oh, I've got nowhere to go, that is a crime. Now think about that. There are no laws, of course, that require cities to provide food, shelter, or restrooms for their indigent citizens. Restrooms, big issue. Public urination is a crime almost everywhere. But is anybody going to help you to do it unpublicly? If you don't have the money or the skin color or whatever it takes to walk into a restaurant and sort of just use the facilities. I think the worst part of this is that in some cities such as Orlando, it is even illegal to help the poor. There are laws forbidding the sharing of food with indigent people in public places. And there's a great group, Food Not Bombs. You might have heard of them. You know, I'm like, hey, you know, and they like to get in those parks and serve vegan food to homeless people. And I don't hold the vegan part against them, but, you know, that's great. But very sweet, nice, middle-class people have spent time in jail for that crime. Now, as far as I'm concerned, that is like outlawing Christianity or outlawing ethics or something. You know, and how do they define indigent? Well, I don't know how the word definition exactly in Orlando, but Las Vegas had a great definition of indigent, and that was that an indigent person is someone whom a reasonable person would consider to be eligible for public assistance or able to apply for public assistance. Now, that could be me in my everyday work outfit, you know, at home as a freelance writer. But that's the depth of prejudice there, you know, is incomprehensible. So we have a pattern in this country. We have been defunding services that might help the poor while ramping up various forms of harassment of the poor, including a law enforcement. So you starve school budgets. For example, you cut all the fun things like art and drama and everything, then make truancy illegal. You cut public transportation budgets and make lateness to school illegal. Shut down public housing and then make it a crime to be homeless. Now, it's clear, you know, the positive kinds of things we need to do in this country. You know, we need affordable housing. We need to raise the minimum wage everywhere. And that's where, you know, you, in Santa Fe, you have to go out there and be the missionaries around the country so you can raise the minimum wage and have a better, stronger community. You could cut, you know, executive compensation at the top of the corporate hierarchy if you just want to keep things in line. You know, it's amazing how some of the same economic conservatives who will say, no, we cannot raise the minimum wage, say, well, how about controlling executive compensation? Oh, no, they do that either. Why not? Why not bring that down? What about some sick days for this country? Nearly half of America's private sector workers have no guaranteed sick days, and can face firing for staying home with a sick child. You know, I could go on and on and on with things that need to be done. I'll mention this since there are college students in the audience. You know, this isn't working, this higher education business. It is not working anymore. You have no guarantee of a job when you get out. What you have is a guarantee of a huge debt. And an awful lot of poor students are trying to get through college now while working full-time, which is not possible. No one should have to go through this. No one should graduate with tens of thousands of dollars in debt. In fact, I'm for an immediate debt jubilee for all those student loans. But, you know, I'm not pushing a positive agenda here. We all know what it is. My sort of short-term demand is much more modest. Could we just stop the meanness? Could we stop the relentless persecution of people who are already having a hard time? Could we stop the wage theft by employers? Could we stop treating low-wage workers as criminals? Give them some rights in the workplace so they could even organize into unions if they want to. Stop penalizing people for their credit scores. Since when is a credit score is a measure of a person's worth? Could we stop harassing the homeless and the indigent? You know, in a sense, to be homeless, to be indigent in America, you have entered the ranks of a population very little different from undocumented workers. It's like you're not a citizen anymore. It's like you have no rights at all here. In other words, could we stop kicking people when they're down? That's my program. Not my whole one, but I don't think this is about, you know, any sort of like, you know, whether you're a liberal or a conservative or what's your religious orientation or anything. I think these are moral issues. How we treat the people who are in need is a moral issue. You know, I tell, when I speak to religious audiences, and I sometimes do, you know, if you're looking for some kind of biblical backup, you know, you're not going to find a lot on abortion in the Bible. You're not going to find anything on gay marriage in the Bible. You're not going to find a word about stem cell research in the Bible. But you will find 3,000 references to the moral claim that people who are hurting, chiefly because of poverty, have on the rest of us. And I think it is time to start acting on that moral imperative and maybe even get to the point where we move on from stop kicking people when they're down to the point where we're actually constantly reaching out a hand. Thank you. Thanks.
After Barbara Ehrenreich's presentation, I had a chance to talk with her.
How has the decline in the union movement affected this issue of wages and poverty?
It's a disaster. The unions, you know, have been pushing for raising the minimum wage. That's a good thing. I fault them for spending the last 5 or so years without doing a huge effort to organize the unemployed. Just so many people have lost their jobs in this country in waves. You know, I've met with mill workers in Maine and foundry workers in Indiana. And when you lose your job, you lose your union membership. No, that's exactly where the union should be in, fighting for you harder than ever. I am quite critical of our major unions. I mean, I'll say something which may get me in a lot of trouble back in D.C., but I think they have to sell off their real estate. Who's visited Washington, D.C., and seen the beautiful buildings that the Teamsters, the AFL-CIO, etc., even the SEIU, occupy? I think all that has to go. It's probably worth hundreds of millions, billions of dollars, and all that has to be turned over into grassroots organizing. Really, that's the only thing to do with that.
Well, union membership is now at almost a 100-year low, and there's been concerted attacks, and well-documented, in Ohio, Wisconsin, Michigan, to take away collective bargaining. Mm-hmm. But talk about their endorsement of Keystone XL, the pipeline project that would bring tar sands.
Well, they didn't come right out and endorse the Keystone pipeline, right? They just said there's a lot of good stuff about pipelines, right? I found very shocking about that in a statement from the AFL-CIO. But at the same time, they're saying we, the unions, have to be sort of a nexus of democratic forces in this country. And they included, you know, civil rights, women, et cetera. And they suddenly dropped the environmental movement. What was that with that? I spend a lot of time backing union organizing drives, walking picket lines. And I always try to remind workers, they have the option of forming their own associations. You do not have to be part of any sort of national or international labor movement, union, to be organized. The flight, like the American Airlines flight attendants, they're not part of the AFL-CIO. They have their own association. The clerical workers at the University of California, at least in Berkeley, own association. That's another way we have to think of that people can go.
The economist Richard Wolff on this stage talked about the systemic and structural problems of capitalism that need to be addressed rather than this or that particular problem. What do you think about that?
I tend to think smaller. I tend to think of, in my actual work. Yes, I agree with Richard Wolff. I agree. Obviously, we have to break things down into the size we can deal with. In Santa Fe, 6-7 years ago, when the living wage movement started, they could have said, well, obviously we have to smash capitalism. That's what's wrong here, right? Some people getting rich off of other people. Right, that would be true at some level. But they also carved out an attack. Now, if you want to call that reformism, then we have a fight, David, and I was hoping we'd have a fight.
I was reminded of this Yeats couplet when you were talking about meanness and kind of the hardening of the emotional arteries in the body politic. He said, we have fed the heart on fantasies. The heart has grown brutal on the fair. How do we stop that meanness?
Well, you see, it's not meanness in us each individually. I think very few of us have an impulse when we see a panhandler to hit the person or something or call the police. But it becomes systematic. You know, when your municipality is so starved for finances that they think that's actually a good way to make money by laying more fines and fees on top of the poorest people, that then it becomes organized. And then we can do something. You know, there are things, a lot of that is in within reach of city ordinances, you know, of people. You want children handcuffed on the streets for being late to school? You got a choice. You know, you can vote on that and go to city council on that. And so you have to, you know, but it means looking at all those places where the gears are turning in that kind of direction and intervening.
But what does it say about the economic system when there's obviously so much work to be done, so much infrastructure that needs to be built and repaired and restored on one side, and on the other side you have all of these people out of work that are looking for work, but this system can't bring them together?
You're indicting capitalism again.
Again,
yeah. No, sure. I mean, it's like, is there any shortage of things to do in this country? And it's not just physical infrastructure. It's also what you could call human or social infrastructure. The baby boomers, more and more, are going to need home health care aides. Just as to give one example. They're going to, you need, if you're not all going to be in nursing homes, we're going to need that kind of service. Right now, home health care aides are treated terribly. They're paid near the minimum wage everywhere. They have, you know, they have no more rights than the average domestic worker. We're not putting the need together with the ability to do something about that. We have so many children. They need tutoring. They need help with school. They need smaller classrooms. And then we have all these unemployed teachers. An economy like that has to be changed.
Your views on women in combat?
Fine. But the point is that ever since the introduction of action at a distance weapons, like bows and arrows, strength, upper body strength, has not been the determining thing in ability to fight. That's nonsense. Now, the other thing is, when you're using action at the distance weapons, and our most common one for the last few hundred years has been guns, you don't want to be in some kind of testosterone rage when you're taking aim. Rage and the total sort of testosterone story of war, silly. Where you got to be now is, you know, unless you're fighting, you know, hand to hand and wrestling or something. So, you know, women, we can do it too. And any guy here who questions that and thinks that women aren't capable of being really aggressive, I'll meet you outside. Thank you.
You were just listening to a tribute to Barbara Ehrenreich. She was a noted social critic, author, feminist, and journalist. She passed away in September 2022. This program is produced by Alternative Radio, based in Boulder, Colorado. We are an independent, progressive nonprofit in our 37th year. We're supported solely by individuals just like you. We feature such voices as Nancy Fraser, Noam Chomsky, Roxanne Dunbar-Ortiz, and Arundhati Roy. And we have a series of programs with Barbara Ehrenreich. To access our complete audio and book catalog, just go to our website, alternativeradio.org. Again, our website where we are podcasting, alternativeradio.org. To get copies of today's program, a tribute to Barbara Ehrenreich, and for a classic book, Nickel and Dimed, just call us 1-800-444-1977. That's 1-800-444-1977. Or you can order online on our website, alternativeradio.org. Printed transcripts, PDFs, and MP3s of this program are available at no charge. Just call us at 1-800-444-1977. Joe Ritchie is our general manager and editor. I'm David Barsamyan. Thank you for listening. We go out with Natalie Merchant. Which side are you on?
Come all you good workers, good news to you I'll tell, of how the good old union has come in here to dwell.
Which side are you on, boys? Which side are you on? Which side are you on, boys? Which side are you on?
Right and wrong. Sit the breaking down the distance between right. between right and wrong.